This is the First Time Podcast.
It's us talking writing and publishing.
Welcome to our Masters series,
where we interview Australian and international authors at the top of their games.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to the First Time Podcast.
Masters series. Hello, Catherine Collette.
Hi. You're looking well rested, or you've just got a Zoom filter happening.
Yeah, that's the Fiji Zoom filter. I don't know if you can see that. I can see your Darwin filter. That's really nice.
Right. Tell us about Fiji.
I wanted to start with you and saying you didn't get eaten by a crocodile.
No.
Did you see one?
Yeah, we did. I think that was actually the highlight. We went on one of these boat rides where they have jumping crocs. Have you seen or heard of this?
Well, I haven't done it myself, but isn't that the way that the Candace Fox, that TV series that's been on the ABC, it'll come to me what the name of it is. It's set up.
Oh, does it start there?
It starts with that's the murder as well. The crocs involved in the.
It's anyway. So funny that you say that. I mean, it's an activity that doesn't feel Peter approved at all, but it was such a highlight. Like, so you're on a boat going down the Adelaide River, and these crocodiles, you see them sort of swim up to you and they sort of talk about this one's name is X and there are 7,000 crocodiles in this. It is this really eerie kind of creepy thing, but you're safe. So it's like the best type of danger.
Well, you think you're safe. How many accidents happen? Keep your hands inside the boat, right?
Well, they do this speech about life jackets and all that sort of stuff, but they say that crocodiles love like brightly coloured things.
So that's why you don't wear life jackets?
Well, you don't wear life jackets on the boat, but they say, you know, I suppose they have to do a safety bit on what happens if something goes terribly wrong. And the idea is that you would put the life jacket on because it's a pretty small boat. There's not another boat to go into. But it's just, it doesn't, I think if the boat starts to sink, it is everything is over.
Imagine.
Like if you survive that, you're very lucky.
Do they smell? Could you smell them?
Smell them. We were, our boat had sort of windows and stuff on the sides.
So when
but
we
they're
were
massive creatures. They're just enormous and they're so strong and primitive and swimming along. They're just like these logs with eyes. It's a really cool thing to do.
It's the fear of being eaten, right? That whole body. I remember when we were up there and we went into this incredible part of Kakadu, and when we picked up our key to get through the gate, there was this sign in the key saying, you know, 7-foot crocodile salty removed like this week, just be aware. And we knew that you couldn't go near the water, this beautiful, beautiful water. And they told us to watch out for the smell, like the kind of rotting meat smell. And I remember just walking along and thinking, I still don't know if I actually did smell the smell or just thinking that I'd smelled. Could smell the rotting meat smell and just like hightailing it back to camp. Spooky as crocodiles.
Well, I mean, it's such a cool place to visit, and I would go back and visit other parts of it because it's far more spread out in reality than you realise in your head. But I would not live there. It's so that Australia of kind of pop culture, you know, there are so many critters and snakes and like deadly stuff. I think I'm too much of a wuss.
Did the kids have fun?
They loved it. They absolutely loved it.
Excellent. I'm glad.
Tell us about Fiji.
Yeah, look, Fiji was a lot of cocktails by the pool. I can say that I well and truly embraced the resort experience. Kids club.
Kids club. Tell me about kids club. It's such a moment in life that kids club is this.
Yeah,
sort of
look, it's really interesting because we went, this was a family trip, so we went with my, sister and brother-in-law and their kids, and so there were four kids. So they kind of had their own gang, which means they didn't necessarily need kids club. Kids club was sometimes a hard sell is what I'm trying to say. But the fact that there was an adult pool where I did do my first ever swim up bar. Can you believe that I'm 41 years old and I've never swum up
I remember a schoolie swim up bar. It's just like.
Yeah, I've never done
I hope there was a lot of chlorine in that water. Just think, ugh.
This one was very schmick, and I did do it with my mother-in-law, which was quite a delight. So obviously to do things like that, one needed the kids to be in kids club. They were really into it. The kids were really into it in the end and would go off like as one or another or the rest of it. And
that's cute.
Look, I just sat there with my pile of books and by, you know, day three, I'd stopped that kind of jittery feeling of thinking that I had to go and visit a mountain and whitewater raft down a river and visit a school, etc. And I just...
Visit a school?
Well, you know, the like cultural things that you generally do. Take books. I don't know. All the things that my little over-anxious brain is like going, these are the things that one should do. I just let go of all of that and embraced the turndown service, you know, and canapes on the all those things. All those things.
That
so it was
good. We didn't
it was it was very delightful. And just taking a full holiday. Because, you know, in these strange times we don't often do that. I took one like workbook, but otherwise they were all books that I wanted, you know, that I'd had on my list that I just wanted to read. It was great. It was great. And I feel like I've been very effective since I've come home, which is helped by the fact that my partner, that Adam is on annual leave at the moment because he's just switched jobs. He's waiting for the new job to start. And wow, it's like having a stay-at-home partner who does the other things. I've sat in this studio for 3 days now and worked 8 till 6 and it's amazing. Plus, just to really lean into my privilege at the moment, plus next week I'm going on retreat for a whole week to write and I am super duper excited.
That's so, such a good combination of things because you've done like good quality family time.
Yep, I've done it. I've been the good mama and now I'm going to be the writer. On writing things, tell me, are you still waiting to hear on your middle grade novel?
I'm still waiting to hear, but so it's probably been 2 months and it's all understandable and blah, 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 but also killing me. And so I've had the book printed out because I said I would read it to the kids and they've been hassling and hassling and hassling and hassling.
Gosh.
And so I finally picked it up. And as I've said before, I've often printed the manuscripts at certain points in time, but I've never actually read them. So now I'm reading it to the kids who are just the most sweet and giving and loving audience. But gosh, what great advice. Like that
what are
everybody
they saying?
Says.
Give us an example.
Well, it's less what they're saying, but you can feel their responsiveness and you can feel where it wanes.
Yes. Have you got something in your hand as you're doing
now
it?
Now I do. It took about 2 nights and then I'm like, I'm just writing this down. You can, because they're being so, like they're being extra sweet, so they're laughing at anything that's remotely funny. So you get an immediate gauge if something is even mildly amusing or if it's not at all. And so I can really see the moments that are completely, completely over their heads.
Yep,
right. I can see where it's slow. It's actually a really good experience.
That is so interesting. Are you going to get them
to has, it has moved it from, because when I sent it, I'd done a lot of work on it and you're sort of at the moment of like, it's great. There's, you know, it could be published like this. And now rereading it, I'm like, oh my God. Like, yeah, fresh eyes. I mean, these are things everyone always says, put it down, pick it back up. But
I know, right?
I am coming fresh to this concept.
That is really exciting. I can't wait to see their, I hope that they're doing a full page, you know, written reader's notes to you at the end.
Well, I think part of Tilly's enthusiasm is I took both kids to Ingrid Laguna's, the launch of her book, Kit and Arlo Find a Way, which is a book on consent. So I took both of them and Ingrid Laguna had a child. It's a co-written book. So I think it was the niece of the other writer, gave the reading. So in the car on the way home, Tilly was like, hey, need someone to do the reading.
Oh my god!
When your next book comes out. So I think she's like eyeing off sections to read. So
I love this so much.
Very cute. Love it. What about you? Are you building up for this retreat that's coming up? Have you been slaving away 8 till 5?
Yeah, not 8 till 5 on the novel, but I do have up in front of me on my whiteboard, I've got a weekly tick list and I'm trying to get words done every day. So I have been doing I worked out a couple of things that there's so much other work going on, podcast work, uni work, etc., here in the studio, that I need to leave the studio sometimes to do my writing. But also, people might have seen I put up on Instagram, and people sent some lovely and very excellent advice. I've put another desk facing a different direction in my studio, looking at the bookshelf, the one behind me here, because we're recording today twice to see if we can put this up on Reels. So I face that, Wi-Fi off, telephone off, and have to get to 1,000 words a day. And I'm trying to do that in the morning before I do other work. So I've done that the last little while.
So you desk hop then?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I just set up. Yeah. Both are set up. But it's really good. I feel like I've got a lot of momentum. Let's say that maybe this has the momentum has increased by meeting with my publisher about deadlines. But this is moving up until my amazing New Zealand retreat, which let's hope the world doesn't go to shit again and we're all locked down or I can't leave the country again. Because I'd really like to get to New Zealand this year for my 3 weeks at the Michael King Writer Centre. So I want to have all this draft down. I passed 100,000 words yesterday. It's big. It's wild.
Of this draft?
Yeah, it's not going to be that big, obviously. There's lots of things I have to cut. But my theory this time is I'm just putting it all down. And then at that, during those 3 weeks of retreat, that will be a big take the whole thing apart and see what I've got. So I'm feeling good. I'm feeling kind of pumped and in the writing phase. It's good. It's good.
So do you have a deadline you can share?
Yeah. Not anything that I would like to say out loud. But yeah, I do have a deadline and a schedule, let's say, which is exciting. It's good.
Excited as a reader participating in the reading of that book.
Yeah.
Anything in that book. I don't know what I'm talking about. Great.
So that's those things. You know what? I got a book out from the library this week called The Actual Star by Monica Byrne, which I wanted to read for a number of reasons. I haven't started reading it, but I did flip, as I always do, to the acknowledgements. This is a long segue. Bear with me. To the acknowledgements, and noticed that it was like 17 pages long. I was like, what the hell? There's so many acknowledgements. And the last 10 pages of this book are just a list of names. And I was like, wow, is this a lot of research or whatever? No, it's Monica Byrne's patrons via Patreon. So she
wow.
every single one of them, and there's hundreds of them, who have obviously, she's a US writer, have obviously supported her practice so that she can write this book. So the very long segue here is that we want to shout out to some new patrons who have come along in the last little while to our podcast. We have 19 amazing patrons. They each contribute somewhere between $5 and $20 a month US. I think the $20 a month is actually my mum.
I think my mum does $20 a month too.
Right. Okay. So mostly our mums are the only ones. Please, yes, no one else thinks you have to do $20 a month. Mostly it's more along the $5 mark. But they are all of them incredible. And the last few, sometimes people ask not to have their names mentioned specifically, but seeing as these three didn't mention not to have their names mentioned, we're going to mention them. Our new patrons are Melissa Manning, amazing writer, author of Smokehouse, which won the VPLA for Fiction Book of the Year last year, I think. So thank you, Melissa. We really appreciate your support. Hayley Scrivener, author of the best-selling, hottest book around town, Dirt Town, which is out right now, and I saw, old... a million followers, Mia Friedman, chatting about this week on
Instagram. It's everywhere.
Mia Friedman also mentioned Sarah Bailey's last book, so congratulations on that, Sarah Bailey. But Hayley Scrivener, thank you also for being a patron and for sending us lovely messages on the First Time podcast. We very much appreciate them. And Tracy Peacock, who's an amazing friend of the podcast and a writer herself from over in Western Australia, who is also a new patron. So thank you all.
Massive thank you to all three and to all the others.
And to all the others, including our mums. You too. Can be a patron. We don't talk about it lots because, you know, it's awkward, but we'll put a link in the show notes to where you can become a patron of the show. We use your hard-earned money to pay our amazing audio producer, Phoebe, and now our incredible admin, person who makes life so much easier.
Oh my God.
The incredible Jill Langhammer. So that's where your money goes, and thank you so much for that. Before we move on to our featured segment, I have a question to ask you, and I want to just gauge your reaction to this because I've been thinking about something for the first time podcast. You know how we experiment with things? I'm thinking maybe we should try Book Talk for the podcast. What do you think?
I know nothing about Book Talk. I know completely zero about Book Talk.
Also, maybe it would be a good experiment.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched TikTok. It's just TikTok, isn't
it? It's TikTok, but books.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if there's anyone from our listeners who has tried this and is doing well with it, or wants to give us some insight, or wants to, you know, just double down on my deep fear of, you know, the people who own TikTok harvesting all of our information, whatever. Like, just tell us about your experiences with TikTok and BookTok. Are we too old for this? Like, is this something that Gracie will say, oh my God, Mum, you're so cringe to me about?
I just see a lot of Instagram reels and videos marked with BookTok. Mm. So people must be dual sharing at the very least.
Yeah. They're doing it. It's, you know, it's so hot right now, apparently, Catherine. Anyway, I thought that we too could be hot right now.
Let's do it. We can be hot.
That might be something. Just let us know your thoughts before we embark on this crazy adventure. You know how we like experiments. But for now, let's listen to you talk to Alex Sarkis.
Today, our featured book segment is brought to you by Ultimo Press, and we are delighted to be talking to Alex Sarkis about her debut novel, Something Blue. Alex Sarkis was born and raised in Sydney's West to Lebanese immigrant parents. In her early 20s, she began writing stories of her own. For the past 10 years, it's been her enduring dream and passion to be a writer and to produce good work that readers will love. Her main source of inspiration has always been the wild and wonderful landscape of her hometown, her family's heritage, and the pride she feels in being Australian. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you so, so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat all things Something Blue.
Congrats on the book. It is so, so good. I think I read it in a day. To me, it is the perfect balance of lightness and easy to read, but also depth. And it made me think, and I've been thinking about it ever since. We're going to start with the elevator pitch. Tell us, what is Something Blue about?
Okay, so Something Blue is a story about a young Lebanese woman named Nicole who arrives at a crossroads in her life. So she decides to pick up her camera and basically return to her old neighborhoods in Sydney's West to rediscover her roots. And because of this, she starts spending more time with her childhood friend, Danny, who you know, makes his living in interesting ways. And her relationship with him begins to sort of intensify and evolve over the ensuing few weeks. And basically her revisiting the West and reconnecting with her roots and reconnecting with her old friends forces her to face some hard truths about herself and about the people around her.
Mm, that's a great summary. Alex, when did you know that you wanted to write this story, and how did you begin?
I mean, I've always had a passion for Sydney and just for being from Sydney. And I've always felt that Sydney has, you know, a lot of untapped potential in terms of storytelling. So that was something that I always had in me that I wanted to write and I wanted to explore. But in writing this particular story, I was actually writing another story, but I was getting a lot of writer's block with that because the plot and the characters and whatever was very ambitious at the time. So I began writing this story as a way to sort of get past writer's block and just be able to write something every day, because obviously this story is a bit of an easy reach for me. You know, I have inspiration for it every day. I'm constantly in and around Sydney's West. So that's how I began writing this story, essentially. It was just almost like a little hobby, a little writing exercise. And then from there, it began to take on a life of its own and really evolve.
It's interesting that you say you started with the setting. The book is set in the west of Sydney. The sense of place is so strong and so evocative, it almost feels like a character.
Yeah.
What is it about, you can say Sydney, but particularly that part of Sydney that you wanted to capture?
I mean, I guess more than anything, I wanted to just lift the curtain on it a little bit, because I feel like Sydney's West is so, like, the entire country knows about Sydney's West, but you see it in terms of headlines or in terms of, you know, whatever's basically on the nightly news. But there's, for me and for anybody that's grown up in the West or around the West or has any kind of connection to it, you know, it's so layered, and that essentially it's a place that really values faith and family and, you know, just has very wholesome values that maybe you don't really have the impression of if you're not from there. So that was something that I really wanted to explore and, you know, pay tribute to.
Mm. Family features very heavily in the book. Nicole is in her 20s. She's obviously got friends, but family, multiple generations of family, cousins, parents, aunts and uncles are really central to her life. Yeah. What is it about family dynamics and the types of relationships that exist within families that interests you?
I mean, Obviously, with Lebanese families in particular, they're quite large and there's such a mix of characters. I mean, I'm not going to speak for everybody's family, but definitely in mine, you know, it's a real mixed bag of nuts. Like, there's always some personality. And so that I think almost has like a ready-made cast for you in that sense, you know. Obviously, all the characters in my book are fictional. I'd say Nicole's immediate family, so her sisters and her parents is loosely inspired by my own family, but any character beyond that is completely fictional. That I've borrowed traits here and there, but they're all fictional. But I don't know, I love the family bonds. I feel like family relationships are so layered and so rich and complicated, and they're I've always loved writing about them. One of my favorite books growing up, actually, and this is going to be a real throwback, I don't know if you might know this book or not, but have you ever read My Family and Other Animals? Do you know that?
No. I feel like I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
It's a real classic and it's very old. It's not fiction, but it really worked off of basically basing a whole story around this particular writer's family unit, and it's so funny and so dynamic, and that was a big inspiration for me in writing this story.
I love that. I was going to ask how much is based on your own family. Has your family read the book? What's been their response?
They've all read the book. I was obviously a bit nervous for my parents to read it. But they loved it. As soon as they read it, they were like, this is great. Like, great. They found it funny. They found it, you know, emotional in all the right ways. So that was a big relief for me, because I thought, my God, if they don't like it. And I only let them read it after I had signed my publishing deal. So I was like, oh, it's probably a bit late in the game for them to be like, we don't like this, we shouldn't go ahead. But they were super supportive. They really loved it. But yeah, and they can sort of pick out little things in the book that they know is based on real life and what's not. But yeah, like I said, if I had to give you a percentage, I'd say it's probably 80% pure fiction. So yeah.
It allows us to guess which bits are real.
Yeah, exactly.
So there are a couple of different young men in Nicole's life. I say young, but they're in their 20s as well. Danny, Dave and Chardy, they're all very different.
Yeah.
I'm interested in how you thought about masculinity and maleness and relationships between men and women, because it feels like sometimes there's this contrast between violence and protectiveness.
Yeah.
Was that a conscious decision? Did you think about those two elements in relation to masculinity?
I think particularly, I mean, I don't like to speak like on behalf of the Lebanese community in general. All I can talk about is my own experience. And I think that from what I've seen, Lebanese people in general still, like the men in our community, still work off that very traditional idea of what it means to be masculine. And for me, that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know. They're just raised with those values and have an idea of what their gender role is, you know. But it wasn't something I consciously did. I more just tried to write certain characters as authentically as I could based off of what I've seen in my own life. It was more just that as a motive rather than trying to get across a particular message or a particular commentary about masculinity.
Mm. They feel very real, I think, is the comment that I would say. Something blue comes out, will be out by the time this goes to air. The book found its home with Ultimo Press. Yeah. How did that come about?
It's a little bit of a long story, but I'll try and make it as succinct as I can. So basically I had started writing this manuscript, like I said, more or less as a hobby. And then when I had gotten most of it down on paper, I sort of arrived at a bit of a crossroads with it where I needed help. I didn't really know how to take it further or how to make it any better than it was. I needed feedback. So I went and did a 6-month course at the Australian Writers' Centre, which was so helpful to me. Obviously workshopped that for 6 months. And from there, I got the advice to sign up for the literary speed dating that the ASA does. Oh,
yes. Yeah. Yep.
So I did, I think, 2 rounds of that. And I got a lot of interest from publishers, but ultimately I signed with Ultimo because I just knew that it was such a good home for this book. I definitely wanted like a Sydney-based publisher because I knew that they would see the value in it. And obviously being from Sydney, and also I just really loved that they were a little bit more independent and boutique in that way, that they could give me probably the attention that I need as a new writer as well. So that's more or less the process of how I ended up getting signed, just through that ASA pitch, those pitch events. And yeah.
That's a great outcome because I have been to one of those pitch events and they very much preface it at the beginning that the likelihood, I mean, they set expectations at the start, don't they?
Yeah, they definitely do. They really like to keep your expectations as, you know, realistic as possible, yeah. I had a really good experience, though. I actually got a lot of interest from, I mean, obviously, like, the synopsis and the elevator pitch is attention-grabbing because everybody's more or less a little bit curious about Sydney's West and people love representation and diversity with writers at the minute. So if you're pitching something like that, that not many other people are writing about, they'll at least want to read like your first 50 pages. So I did have a pretty good experience on that front. Probably proper serious attention from 2 publishers, and then I ended up going with Ultimo.
So you've sort of touched on a little bit perhaps of writing advice there, but we do have a lot of writers that listen to this show. What is the best or the worst writing advice that you've received or have to offer?
Oh, my God. The best and the worst. So I think probably the best thing that I did was definitely the workshop that I went for.
What course was it?
I can't really remember the name. I think it was just like it's something particular to do with finishing your novel or something to the tune of that. I can't actually remember the exact name. I need to figure that out. But it was definitely with AWC, and that was really jumping into the deep end for me because up till that point I hadn't let anyone read my work. So I was and I didn't really know what the course involved until I got there. I thought it would just be between me and the tutor, but I realized that it kind of works in rounds and you have to show your work to a class of like 14 people every few weeks. And obviously I was so nervous to have to do that, but that's probably the best advice I can give a new writer is that feedback's essential. Obviously you take everything with a grain of salt. At the end of the day, it's your story. So you know, you've got to go with your gut on a lot of things, but being able to see it through fresh eyes is very, very important because when you're staring at it yourself all day long, it all sort of becomes white noise. You need to have that feedback. So that's definitely some advice that I would give a new writer that has a new manuscript and is trying to make it the best it can be. What else? I think, and reading a lot. You've got to read a lot. I didn't really take that into account as well when I was writing. I thought, cool, I know what I'm doing, whatever. But actually when you read a lot, you learn a lot about writing, about structure, about different turns of phrase, dialogue. So don't underestimate that either. So get people to read your work and also read other people's work is two bits of advice I'd give people.
Mm, I think writing changes how you read so much.
Yes, yeah, it does. It really does, yeah.
On the topic of reading, we always ask people for a debut book recommendation. Yeah. Can you recommend it can be fiction, non-fiction, it can be recent, it can have come out a long time ago, any genre? Do you have a recommendation for us?
Like a first-time book from someone, is that what you mean? Is it okay if they've written other books since?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so I really liked Trent Dalton's Boy Swallows Universe. I'm pretty sure that was his debut. I loved that. That's a book that I started reading while I was maybe toward the end of writing Something Blue, but it really helped me in terms of just how brilliantly he described sort of suburban landscapes and made them really interesting. Cast of characters he had in there that was that really sort of influenced me toward the end of my writing. And yeah, it's also just a great story. So I would definitely recommend that to people.
Okay, we're going to do literary articles. I believe you have one.
I do. I do have one. And this came up because I am a subscriber to The Amazing Kill Your Darlings, which I can thoroughly recommend. So this article is by Anna Snookstra, whose book Out of Breath we are going to be reading and talking about coming up. It's about research and method writing, and I was so into it. It's about the research for her latest book where she felt like, which involves kind of farm work, you know, that backpacker kind of farm work.
Like and
the
kind of.
Yeah, yeah. But more like the visa one, that the people okay, that were missing right. more that one. Dodgy kind of, you know, being put out in a ridiculous bunkhouse somewhere and picking apples or mangoes or whatever. And this feeling that Anna had that she really had to live this experience before she could write about it, which is something dear to my own heart as the girl who goes down to the local butchers, et cetera, to practice butchery or goes on a yacht. And it was about that kind of procrastination of that period and the way that that holds you back and that you can't actually get into the writing. And I loved it so much. I tweeted about it and Anna replied to me kind of like, just jump in the water, Kate, like get on with your writing, stop researching. So that was incredibly useful. We'll put a link to it, but I wanted to ask you, because I reckon you don't do it. Do you ever get caught up in the research so much that you can't write?
No.
Mm.
No, which
I suspect
actually
much,
for this new book, I realized that I have been to the Western Treatment Plant before. I need to go back, and I think I also need to go back with bird watchers. So,
Angela Savage.
I know I contacted Angela Savage, I've got to hook something up with her. But I
probably Bird Michael
for a while
because
oh yeah, of course
Bird Michael would definitely have gone there.
A lot of bird people.
There's many bird people on Twitter.
So I haven't, but, and I was going to talk about that this in listening. Have we talked about the How To podcast before? How To Academy?
No.
You will like this particular episode. So it's really good. It's by their BBC. I got into it through another episode, but there's an episode with Elizabeth Gilbert interviewing Julia Cameron, who is the artist's
way. Okay, I want that right now.
And I have never read The Artist's Way. Have you?
I have experimented with The Artist's Way back in the day.
Recently. I mean, I always just put it in this bucket of like extremely bohemian sort of, I don't know, not interested.
Yeah.
But hearing them talk about it, like it sounds amazing. But one of the concepts that really stood out was this idea of the artist's date. And so you take yourself on a creative date. You have to be alone and you can do anything. And I was thinking bird watching would be a good thing that I could do, although I didn't really, like I could recognise a magpie and a kookaburra, but potentially some aspects of bird watching might be, you know, I might be missing out.
Beyond you?
Exactly. But one of the artist's dates that Julia Cameron talks about is that she goes to this pet shop sometimes and they have a day a week where they get a particular rabbit out and you can pat the rabbit. So they can be really simple things, but the idea is, I think I've ordered The Artist's Way now, I haven't read it, is that they're completely unproductive in the sense that they're just about being... Well, I know, this is why I have to read the book. It's a bit premature to be talking about it, but I am thinking about that idea of, you know, you're saying you're getting stuck in the research.
Yeah.
I'm attracted to this idea of it's not even research.
Yeah.
But an enforced plodding around in the world.
Okay.
And seeing what that looks like.
I'm up for both.
I thought you might have been an Artist's Way person, but you've just dabbled.
Is no, right? I have. Do you remember, we've talked about this, how I used to work in the hippie shop?
Do you know what? As you had just opened your mouth, then I was thinking about crystals and the hippie shop.
Yeah, so I used to, and I've, in fact, that's really funny that this comes up because I've been walking in my hood lately, and I think it's a combination of I still live in a part of outer Melbourne where lots of people have wood smoke fires, so there's a lot of that happening, and the time of night that I've been walking, but someone is burning the incense, and I remember the name of it, Purple Haze. It was always the most expensive incense and the most popular that we sold. Other people who are listeners might remember this particular incense. Someone's burning it at the moment.
That's so funny.
And it's taken me straight back to those days. And Julia Cameron's book was one that we had this very limited little selection of kind of woo-woo books. And Julia Cameron's was one there. So I came to it first that way before I was kind of came to it as a writer.
I mean, Elizabeth Gilbert is a massive proponent of this book.
Yeah.
And it's sort of very structured. And I was so excited about it. I started, well, I looked everywhere for a copy. I was looking online, and really the only places I could find them were overseas. So I've ordered this copy that is going to take 3 weeks to get here. And then I wanted it so bad, I also bought the ebook. But then last night I went to the launch of Bootstrap by Georgina Young, and lo and behold, on the shelf of readings
of course,
is this copy of The Artist's Way, which teaches me a lesson into just get off your ass and go to the bookshop.
Absolutely. So there's two things that I want to ask about that. First, Bootstrap by Georgina Young. Terrific. Excellent. How was this?
Excellent.
How was the launch?
Really excellent. I was the launcher, which was even more exciting.
I love that.
It was really fun. Cool book. It is really, really different to Lona, which is always very exciting.
I loved Lona.
Lona was great. Lona was a real balm for the soul in lockdown.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember reading it very well. But Bootstrap is a time travel thriller. And the concept of time travel, I haven't read a lot about time travel. Most of what I know comes from Back to the Future. It's completely different to Back to the Future, how time is structured and how you travel through it and whether you can change events. Really good, really interesting, very, very well plotted, very cleverly plotted.
That's cool. That makes me think about Vanessa Lenz's book, which Only a Monster, and that time travel in there and just the cleverness about how people are thinking about that. And okay, Bootstrap, adding it to my list. The other thing that I wanted to quickly mention, Brotherhood Books. Do you ever look up Brotherhood Books?
I do occasionally. Actually, The Artist's Way would be the perfect Brotherhood Books books.
It totally would. I've ordered three books in the past 2 weeks from Brotherhood Books, which is, for people who don't know it, is like the, you know, the books that you send. Who is Brotherhood Books?
Well, Brotherhood is like a
Brotherhood of St. Lawrence.
I think they're called the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, but they're like an op shop. But I think their op shops are, the bookstore is different. It's all secondhand books. But I think their version of an op shop is all free from.
Yeah, not sure. But anyway, it's very good. We'll put a link into that too as well. Okay, so listening to How To on the BBC, what else are you listening to?
So the way I got into the How To Academy, and there are just some cracker combinations of people and episodes. The Elizabeth Gilbert one's really good. The other one that's really good is there's this British journalist that I like called Pandora Stikes or Styles. Anyway, she interviews Tina Brown, who wrote the Palace Papers on the House of Windsor.
Oh, wow.
So the British royal family. I'm not a massive royal enthusiast, but that book about the House of Windsor was really well received. And so it's an interview all about the royals, but it's a really interesting take. And they talk about everything from what should the royal family do about Prince Andrew. Tina Brown, I think, was a real question for our time. I think she was editor of the paper, or was heavily involved in the initial exposure of, what's his name, Epstein?
Yeah.
So she's got really good insight to that. She's got great insight into Meg's and Harry and where they've misstepped. this whole thing about also working for the royal family, and that it's always been premised on that it's a great privilege, and so they've never paid very well. And so there was this period of time where people would leave, and sometimes in a disgruntled way, and the royals just really didn't conceive that that people would write a book about what it was like. So I think there was a butler and stuff, and how they were really slow to come to this idea of an NDA. Whereas, you know, if you had equivalents in America or in other places, they would be all over that sort of stuff. But just really interesting. And, you know, just those little facts, like Prince Philip is an incredible tight ass, you know, has owned the same pair of trousers since forever. Yeah, it's really good. So that great, a lot of great episodes in that podcast. The other one is this Pandora, I'm going to say Styles. It's her name, Pandora Styles. So BBC, she's got a podcast series called Unreal, History of Reality TV. So it's 10 episodes and it takes you, yeah, it's really good. So it's 10 episodes and it starts with Big Brother and then it goes through different eras and shows. So there's a couple of, there's one episode on The Real Housewives. There's one episode on The Hills and Laguna Beach. But there's a couple episodes on this sort of era in reality TV they call the Wild West, where it just was really extreme and anything went. Do you remember a show called The Swan? It was this reality TV show. I can remember watching it. But so you had however many contestants, and each week they got a new round of plastic surgery.
Oh, my God. No, yes. I don't remember.
And so they lived in a house where that had no mirrors and no glossy surfaces, and they couldn't see themselves. And extremely, extremely problematic.
How are those people going now?
It's a great question. The weird thing, and so one of the things about plastic surgery is it actually only lasts about 7 years. So after this period
of time.
Any
plastic surgery?
Pretty much. Like, plastic surgery is an impermanent thing, and because you get a facelift, the face will eventually drop. It's not permanently lifted. So, you know, you get all this surgery and you can be made aware of that fact, but how much you take it in when you want the surgery. Anyway.
Wow.
But interestingly, a lot of them are really positive about it. And, yeah, it's fascinating. So that's what
I love the rabbit holes you take me down sometimes. I've written all this down even before we get to the show notes.
We're just on the opposite sides of the reality.
Oh, my God. I love it so much. So what are you watching?
Nothing. We had no internet in Darwin, and I've not watched a lot since I came back. It was a good forced break, but I should have put an out of office on, but it's still a good forced break.
That is a nice forced break. We didn't watch anything over there, but I have come back, and finally, why did it take me this long? Given in to my daughter's pleading and started with season one of Stranger Things, which I know I am
I know nothing about Stranger Things.
Oh my goodness. Like, I'm late to this party. You're even later to the party because now I'm kind of midway through season two. It is so good. Like, I get that season four is what's hot right now. I'm going back. Like, I'm back starting at the start.
What is even the premise of this?
So it's 80s, deep 80s. This is where like Kate Bush coming back, running up the hill has all come from, right? Let's work back from that moment. Small town America, paranormal kind of vibe. Kids, high school. But this is a terrible, there will be Stranger Things fans who are just going, Kate, you are massacring the premise of this show. But, you know,
and yet I'm intrigued.
High school, Winona Ryder is the mum. Like,
wow.
Yeah. 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 And it's so good. It's so good for lots of reasons. And what I want to ask our listeners to do, because you'll be across this, you know, when Catherine and I clearly are not, is it's really hard. I want to know everything about story structure and the writing of the first season and how they made it and the way they've done the multiple narrative threads, etc. But it's very, very hard to look up those kinds of pieces of writing without getting spoilers.
No spoilers.
So
yeah.
This is my question to our dear listeners. If you have some great season one Stranger Things articles that you could send my way, that would be incredible because I don't want to risk spoilers. I'm watching it with the kids, I can't do the binge, the normal binge that I might do. Oh, so I'm watching it with the kids. Yeah, so annoying. But we have promised, and they have promised me they won't watch it without me, and I have promised them. So it's pretty scary.
I was about to say, is it scary for them?
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I mean, I've said this before. My youngest, who is only 9, is very into scary and thrillers and horror. I have now given into this and gone with it. My eldest is not so much. She gets a bit scared, but like what she's reading right now, she just wants to read murder all the time. So it's kind of fitting into that. I know. Whack. What have I done in my house? What have I done wrong? Anyway, so that's been amazing. And I also wanted to mention plane watching. Obviously I had some plane time to watch.
How many hours to Fiji?
Well, that's another question, Catherine. Let me just say it's 5.5 hours direct on the way home. So let's just leave it at that, and not get into the trauma of getting there. But I watched on Fiji Airways Let Them All Talk, which is a 2020 Meryl Streep film. I had never heard about it. Basic premise is that Meryl Streep is a kind of famous author who is about to receive a literary prize but won't fly. So her publicist who's waiting, or her agent who's waiting desperately for the next book, encourages her to take the Queen Anne, do the transatlantic ship ride to get to receive this literary award that she's received. And she invites 2 old friends and her nephew on the boat. Now, that in itself, interesting, I suppose, because it's an author. What I didn't realise, so I started watching it for that reason and because I love Meryl Streep, but it's a Steven Soderbergh film. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, this has got to be improvised. This feels like it's improvised, as in the dialogue and the way that it's filmed, etc. So when I got home, I looked it up, and it's based on the work of, I've written down her name, a short story writer called Deborah Eisenberg. So Steven Soderbergh kind of approached her about a concept that she worked up into a bit of a script, got Meryl Streep involved, and then the actors basically improvised on set on the real Queen Anne on a transatlantic crossing. And it was so interesting. It was just really interesting. The dialogue is incredibly sharp. It's just, super interesting for writers to watch.
Given a character,
I read an article.
A sense of a character?
Yeah, they've definitely got characters, and I think they had backstory. And I read a really interesting article, which I'll link to, which kind of talked about the fact that they needed to get somewhere in a scene, and it was up to the characters to get to that place. In character. So yeah, super interesting. I'm not actually sure where you can watch it, but yeah, but it's really worth
Flood Fiji. That's
exactly. Maybe that's the way you watch it. But that is well worth watching. Okay.
How
reading.
Cool. Reading. I've read heaps.
Go.
Heaps and heaps. But a lot of which I read in Darwin. I too had that lovely experience of just unwinding. I read 3 Sally Hepworth books.
Oh, love it.
Which were great. My favourite one was her most recent, I think it's her most recent, The Young Wife.
Yeah.
But what is interesting about her work is I think she's written 6 books that are in this sort of domestic thriller, I suppose, space. You see how she's gotten better and sharper, and I really enjoyed them. Great page turners. I have had, and I must admit I felt this a bit too in reading it, more than one person who's read those books say to me, that is a writer. Maybe I should do that. Like that she does it in such an effortless way that you think, oh, yeah, seems pretty easy. Like good. I'm saying good, but also you walk away going, oh, yeah. Just
I have so much time for Sally Hepworth. I had that brilliant conversation with her for Yarra Valley Writers Festival last year. And I also just love, do you follow her on Instagram?
She sold a million copies. Oh, yeah. She's great on Instagram. She's great on Instagram. Highlight of my Instagram day.
Yeah, her tour, her US tour, incredible. I cannot wait to, be in convo with her somewhere in the next coming bit, because I am so fascinated by the wig stuff.
I was hoping you were going to say wigs.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wigs are where it's at.
I did not know. So, you know, when you say to your friends, are we doing this now? Like, I don't know. Are we
Yes.
I don't know. Yeah. Are we chucking away all our skinny leg jeans now? Is that what we're doing?
Yes, that's a good.
I didn't realize that we're doing wigs now.
Well, I think like hair extensions and things that are pinned in have been around for a while. I remember wearing one at my wedding and calling it a switch, which I thought was hilarious. But I think now when I watch, and there was a comment made on the Writers' Room podcast, which was about the Sex and the City reboot, it was about the amount of hair that has gone into that. And so all of these characters that have full heads of hair that you see, all of these people in general, not even characters, on TV, that is not their real hair. They might not be wearing a full wig, but they are wearing many, many, many pieces in that hair.
How do hairdressers feel about this? Like, I mean, what it's taking away from, I thought the rule was like, do what you must do with, you know, what you got given. Like, I got given this really limp, straight hair that doesn't do anything, that like gets tangled, and I didn't realize that you don't have to just deal with that.
I know. I think, and there's a distinction between the extensions and stuff and the, I mean, and we're talking as white people as well. I mean, that's
absolutely.
But yeah, it's a whole world. And now I realize, because I would envy people so much on TV for their hair, and now I realize it's not their hair.
It's not their hair.
I mean, it still looks amazing, but
it does.
I don't have to feel a deficit.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just.
But I love her candor as well.
Oh, I love her candor completely, and also just making me realize. I'm like, thank goodness you said, Sally. Otherwise, I would have just been like, wow, you know, who is your hairdresser? She's just done this incredible thing, and instead, I'm like, oh wow, who is your wig maker? This is a new thing. Yeah, I mean, maybe this is what I'm going to do for the next book. Watch this space. This could be an experiment.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Sally Hepworth. What else did you read?
What else did I read? The Candy House is my current read. I'm 66% of the way through. Jennifer Egan, so good. So good.
So good.
I don't recognise it as being related to, I think that some of the same characters are in the Grimmsgård, but I read that so long ago that I don't know, any callbacks are completely lost on me.
Just wait until you finish, and then you get on Jennifer Egan's website, which I have mentioned here before.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows you the links and her draft material. It's the coolest website ever. Get on it.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah, so go down that rabbit hole.
Go down that rabbit hole.
The other great one is Sicker in the Head. Judd Apatow has released, this is his second volume of interviews with comedians. It's still really good. It has interviews from his very early days. I think he's going to interview with John Candy, and Judd Apatow is probably 15. And it didn't make the first volume, so it's not the best.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are the interviewing skills?
Yes, exactly. So, but just hearing John Candy's words feels like that's a nice thing. The good thing about it too is it makes a much greater effort at diversity than the first round, which was pretty white males.
Nice, nice.
Mindy Kaling is in there. I have a huge crush on Mindy Kaling. So that's my other recommendation. Books for you. What have you got?
Books for me. So I took over quite the pile. The first one, which I started on the plane, and which was kind of unfortunate because I then thus gave up all of my first day in Fiji by just sitting by the pool and reading, was Marshmallow by Victorian Hannon.
I want to read this. I don't have a copy.
Yeah, it's not out yet. I may be able to lend you my reading copy. It's coming out very soon, I think mid-August, but I'll put the pre-order link in. It is so damn good. So this is Vic's second book. Her first, of course, was Kokomo, which was incredibly well received. I was trying to think of how I was going to describe it, because I know it will inevitably be described as having real The Slap vibes, because it's multiple perspective and it is on the anniversary. So multiple perspective, different friends around the anniversary of a really tragic incident, the 1 year anniversary of a tragic incident. So I know that it will have kind of the Slap comparisons because of that. Very Love My Way vibes. If you're a TV Love My Way kind of a person, very Melbourne vibes. I think that it's going to be the big kind of hot read of this summer. That's my prediction.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, it's very good. Very hard to put down. Also just a beautiful kind of, thinking about and sitting with grief as well, which I know Vic will probably talk about as the book comes out. So that is coming, and people should be excited about that. The other one that I read was Maggie Shipstead's short story collection, You Have a Friend in 10A, which was just excellent. I mean, people know that I've been crushing on Maggie Shipstead's writing since Great Circle. And it's so good. It's so good. They're like those kind of short stories, and some of them are quite long, that are just full absolute worlds within them. But the one that I really want to mention, just because of its literary relevance, is called Acknowledgements, and it's literally worth the price of the book just to read this particular story. It is, I'm calling it the ultimate lit bro takedown. So the point of view is a, you know, young-ish white guy who's published his first book, and it's just both unbearable and delicious to read. I don't know if you ever followed that that Twitter account for a while. I think it was called like Guy in Your MFA or White Guy in Your MFA, and it was just that, you know, that guy in the writing course who, you know, carries around a copy of, I don't know, whatever.
The Artist's Way. No.
Yeah. No. More quite, Dave Eggers. No. Something under his, yeah, you know, yeah, and yeah. It's that guy. And it is just so unself-aware, so arrogant. It's just delicious. So it urge people
very,
to read that.
That particular one sounds very McSweeney's to
yes.
me.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. So that's wonderful. I can highly recommend that. And then the other one, so surprising to me. So Inga Simpson's new one, which is not out till the end of October, it's called Willow Man. I'm going to admit it right here, and I haven't said this to you, Inga, but I thought that Willow Man was kind of like, after Inga's last one, The Last Woman in the World, I thought that Willow Man was kind of this like creature, you know, like it was kind of spec ficky thriller horror. I didn't realize that this was Inga's cricket book. So Willow Man is a bat maker who makes cricket bats out of willow. And so this is a cricket book. Now, I am not very cricket literate. I like it on in the background, you know, on a lazy summer weekend, just because. But I don't listen to much. It. And I think I've gone once when my friends made me go, and I
there's no watch. Way my kids are allowed to play cricket.
Yeah. Like, so not into
long
it.
Long game.
But I do remember very clearly that you might remember this. There's a scene in Jasper Jones, in Craig Silvey's book, a cricket scene in it, that I can remember reading and thinking there must be a whole chapter, but being deeply invested in the outcome of this particular part of the cricket. And that is what Inga's whole book is, like deeply, deeply invested in these cricket matches, in these cricket players. I'm going to be watching the cricket in a whole different way. It's obviously about more than cricket. It's about trees.
When it talks to cricket, it talks to real life cricketers, like people who exist.
Some more famous, and it's based on some, and the acknowledgements were really interesting in themselves. And it's based just as 2020 is kind of coming in. That's where it's kind of set during that time. And it's kind of, and it's about artistry, and it's about talent, and it's also about music, and it's about legacy. It's about so many things, but hard recommend to pre-order your copy of Willow Man. And just one of those moments where you just think, I'm so, that book has just opened up this whole other world and whole other way of seeing the world for me. So super excited about that one too. So many books.
Yeah, so many books right now. Like there's a lot of good books at the moment. I feel like I'm excited about a lot on my to be read. I'm doing, I want to do this and then this and then this. I'm going to do this on audio. And
there are a hell of a lot of books. We will be talking about books and what we're reading in a bookshop.
So fun. This is on the peninsula.
This is on the peninsula, August the 4th at the beautiful Antipodes bookshop down in Sorrento. If you're in the area, or hell's bells, if you want to just come down and make a weekend of it. It's a Thursday night, you know.
We, in fact, are making a weekend of it.
We are making a weekend of it. Do join us. It'll be us, Catherine and I, just talking books, doing a show, but on the stage with with you as an audience and with champagne, I think, because Antipodes is very good at providing a tipple. So we're very much looking forward to that. Other things coming up? Other things you're going to?
Well, one thing I'm doing is Ben Hobson from Books, Burgers and Beers is going to interview me for his podcast.
Oh,
you have been on that podcast.
I have. Haven't you? I have been on that podcast. Can you tell us what book you've chosen?
Well, this is what I was going to ask. Like, what book did you choose?
Well,
I was stewing. I had a first thought. I'll tell you what my first thought was after you've gone. No, yeah. You tell me first. What did you?
Okay, so I was a bit of a rebel and I chose Oscar Wilde's The Selfish Giant, the short picture story. Which
I don't even know that book, so I just feel disappointed. I wanted a great reveal of character there.
Yeah, no, well, that is, I mean, what I can say is it is a great reveal of character that is the book that I chose. And Ben hadn't read it either. And it was quite wonderful to go into it. So there you go. What are you going to choose?
Well, now that this wasn't what I was going to choose, if I was going to do a kid's book, I would do The Giving Tree. I think that's such an interesting book.
Beautiful. Yep. Okay, there you go.
Controversial book.
Very controversial now.
If I, my first thought for a book, and a favourite book is way too heavy a load, but
exactly.
The first book that I thought of was Remains of the Day.
Beautiful.
I love that book.
I think that's great.
So maybe Remains of the Day.
I think that that's a great selection. I will enjoy listening to that. And have you got your burger planned for that night?
But I'm definitely going to have a burger. I'll get it delivered. We did that for work recently. Yes. We had a team meeting and we all got Uber Eats delivered, which worked
well. Do that. That's
I got the biggest
fun.
Order ever because what work was paid. I just got like
such a cheapskate, Catherine Collette.
Well, it was an opportunity. We never get Uber Eats. Like, I think I only started my Uber Eats account a few months ago. So it was.
I only get it when I stay with friends in the inner city.
You can't even get it. No, yeah, that's right.
Oh. Out here in the hills.
It's good. It's good. I say about, you know, a long time after it started.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's meal delivery finally. Service. Quite really convenient.
Never have to leave the home. Right. Okay. Well, I look forward to that. I look forward to seeing people at Antipodes. Wonderful to see you. I hope the Darwin glow, the Fiji glows don't leave us too soon. You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.